Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll conclude a conversation about lessons we've learned in our first 20 years.
Yeah, Lane, I think these are really instructive podcasts for the following reason. You know, usually we just talk about leadership ideas, things that we're doing, things that we're learning, things that we're reading. In these two podcasts, we're answering the question, if we were to go back 20 years and start over, what would we do again? Because, you know, we've read so many books, so many articles. We've had so many people come in. We've attended so many conferences. And like most people listening to this podcast, you know, we're all kind of learners. We're leadership junkies. And, you know, you read something and you think, oh, that's it. Then the next, you know, next year you read another book and you go, oh, no, that's it, you know. Yeah. And so if we don't do this, and is that really key to success? And information is very – especially principles, some information and some business or organizational practices are very difficult to integrate into the life of a company or an organization. It takes a long time. And so you wonder, is it worth it? Is this even a hill worth dying on? You know, so what we're doing in these two podcasts, we're looking back and saying this. Of all the things we read, of all the things we tried, of all the things that we thought were important – these were the things that we would do again because they really made a difference. Now, we read a lot of things, tried a lot of things that worked for a while, that made a difference because we were focused on them. But over time, we just got too busy and you know, we don't even remember. But there's a handful of things that we were intentional about that going, if we were to go back, we would focus on again because they really made a difference. So last month, we talked about two things that we would definitely go back and do again that have been key to our success. Today, we're going to talk about three more.
Yeah, and the two that we looked at last month were you have to have a uniquely better product or idea, and you have to have a culture of continual improvement.
So to our podcast audience, if you missed last month's podcast, please listen to that first and come right back and we'll pick it up from where we left off last month.
So let's move to the next thing that we thought was important then, but that we know is important now, and that is the power of a clear mission and vision.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I hear people say mission is overrated, vision is overrated, and I can understand that. It's sort of like, yeah, we've talked about it, everybody's heard about it, but at the end of the day, we have to go to work, we have to do things, we have to accomplish things. But I could not disagree more.
Right.
There is such extraordinary power in the clarity around a mission or a vision, and we won't spend time today distinguishing between mission, vision, strategy, and all that. There's much that's been said and written about that. But the idea of having a singular idea that drives everything in an organization, I would go back and do that 1,000 times over. In fact, of all the things that we did that I think galvanized us as a team and answered a lot of questions for people and clarified the answers that we gave to people, it was this idea of a singular mission, one overarching thing that this is what we're here to do. Right. This is what defines success for us. And I can remember in the early days when I first read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey's book, that was the first time I was introduced to this whole idea of a mission statement or vision statement. And in that book, he gave the illustration of the bellman at the Ritz-Carlton. And I think I've told this story before, but you and I had an opportunity to go spend time with the gentleman that trained the bellman, the cooks, the maids, and the management at the Ritz-Carlton, because the Ritz-Carlton headquarters were here in Atlanta. And I asked the owner of the Ritz-Carlton, who was a friend of my parents, I said, Bill, I said, really, bellmen have a mission statement? I mean, does anyone want to grow up and be a bellman? I mean, bellmen sit around and have these – I mean, I can't get executives to sit around and have these discussions, bellman. He said, you just need to go through our training and you'll understand why. And for both of us, for our team, that day, that was 22, 23 years ago. That was an eye-opening experience as we saw the power of a singular idea that has the – again, that galvanizes energy, clarifies why are we here, and answers a multitude of questions before they're asked, and again, gives people handles on how to answer certain questions when they're asked. So I do not think mission and vision is overrated. And I think whatever time an organization spends on crafting that idea, wordsmithing that idea – energizing that idea, bringing the, you know, that makes it memorable, important, and portable, that is not wasted time.
Yeah, I remember, Andy, when we were reading Marcus Buckingham's book, he said really the number one thing people want from their leader is clarity.
Absolutely. And above everything, like far above everything, And so that's what a mission, that's what a vision statement is. That's what a mission statement is. It's here's where we're going. I don't know exactly how. I don't necessarily know when. There are going to be obstacles along the way. But at the end of the day, this is where we're going. And we've seen this in the political realm. We've seen this in industry and business and nonprofit and church. The person that surfaces with the clearest sense of direction is perceived to be the leader, whether they have any leadership skills or not. Right. But you know, you give someone with a little bit of communication skills a clarifying statement about the future, and people lean in their direction. It's not just an organizational thing. It really is a leadership principle. When a leader gives voice to what people are worried about, afraid of, angry about, they feel understood. And when someone feels understood, they are three-fourths of the way to saying, I'll follow you. I will accept your answers as the answers to these questions. So that's what a mission statement, that's what a powerful vision statement does. So I do not think it's overrated. In fact, I have a bad habit of criticizing mission and vision statements all the time. You know, you walk into a hospital and there it is on the side of the wall and it's like four sentences long. Everybody walks by it. No one can repeat it. Or someone gives you a business card and on the back it says, our mission is, and you think, wow, would you invite me to your next meeting? I could help you with this. You know, I know what you're trying to say, but you've said too much. But I'll tell you a great example. I have a friend who has ALS. He's about 3 years in. You know, it's a terrible, terrible, dreadful disease. We have a small group that we meet every week, and he's in our group of couples that we're just there for Tim as he slowly leaves this life. So we went to the ALS walk a few weeks ago. And all the men and women with ALS have a team, so we all have our T-shirts on. So I got there, and there's this huge banner created by the ALS Association, and here's their vision. And I think this is extraordinary. It says, ALS Association, vision, a world without ALS. A world without ALS. Hey, what are you guys trying to do? I mean, do they need to say anything else? And you know, as simple as that is, I guarantee you that took hours and hours. There were sentences, paragraphs, ideas, and they narrowed it. And when they show up at work every day, when they show up to do the seemingly minutia of organizational life, why are we here? We are here to create a world without ALS. That's a powerful statement. I think every organization, even divisions, departments within organizations, and we've talked about this, who spend the time to find that thing that galvanizes the energy of their people, that is not wasted time. Lane, I heard you say in a training one time, in fact, I wrote it down, that fighting to answer why and fighting for the why will eliminate a lot of other fights. Let me read that again. I think this is a great statement, that fighting to answer why, in other words, that's that meeting where it's like, you know, how long are we going to talk about this? And fighting for the why, that is defending what we've, you know, the reason we're here, will eliminate a lot of other fights.
Andy, as I think about, you know, that struggle that we were just talking about, one resource that I think is incredibly helpful is your book, Making Vision Stick, and especially in the idea of how to make that mission and vision memorable and portable.
As you said, it's a very short book. It's a quick read, but it's an extraordinarily important topic because at the end of the day, vision is sort of like, hey, when in doubt, break the glass and read this. You know, when in doubt, just break the glass and read this. All that to say, if we were starting over and you asked me what's the irreducible minimum, what have you done for 20 years that you would definitely do again, the time we spent crafting our mission and our vision statements and the time we spent defending it was worth every minute of that time.
All right, Andy, the fourth thing that we thought was important then but we know is important now is the value of a learning team.
As we've discussed before, from the very beginning, we decided to be a learning organization, a learning team, and we actually stole that phrase from the fifth discipline that we read together that none of us really understood, but we did finish it. And the whole idea that if we don't learn together, we won't grow together. So we were always reading articles. I was always giving you books to read. We underlined them. We spent months and months working through stuff. And when I share this with other leaders, they kind of look at me like, okay, how do you know that's not a waste of time? And the answer is we never knew whether or not it was a waste of time.
Right.
Again, there are things that we took from every book, every article. Some we implemented. Some we implemented for a while. So it's risky in the sense of if you're really trying to be efficient, you know, having a learning team is not efficient. Yeah. But I believe if suddenly somebody could go back and extract all that time from our organization, we would be poorer for it. Mm. It is an intangible. It feels like an intangible. At times, it does feel like time not well spent. But looking back, you know, for 20 years, I think being a learning team and committing to learning together was an extraordinary, extraordinary part of our journey. And when I say a learning organization, I mean taking time out of just about every leadership team meeting every single week and saying, let's talk about what we read. Let's work for the next 30 minutes through those three paragraphs or through that chapter. Let's argue about it. Let's essentially invite the author in to our organization and look at our organization through the lens of this content and this insight. And again, some of it was great. Some of it was extremely helpful. Some of it we thought was important. Turned out it wasn't. Again, it's risky. It's such an intangible. But I just think, and as you and I discussed before this podcast, that has done so much for us, and we continue to do that today. I mean, we're constantly sending each other things saying, hey, is this something our leadership team should read together? Right. Or should we read part of this? Or would it be okay if I came in and talked about this one idea I read? So that's what a learning organization is. It's a group of people that have decided we know what we're doing individually, we understand our job descriptions, but we want to make the organization better. And we can learn from other organizations and we can learn from other authors. So why not invite their ideas into our leadership team meeting? Let's contextualize them. Let's talk about them. And let's use what we can and move on and leave the rest behind.
Andy, I think one of the most valuable pieces of this to me was that when you would bring a book or an article in or someone else would, it was a series of ideas, and we could push back against an idea without feeling like we were pushing back, you know, against our boss or against the organization.
Or someone else's idea in the meeting.
Yeah, someone else in the room. And so it enabled us to almost address issues without addressing issues, because we could talk about the idea as a standalone thing, but then we were all able to draw the connections, you know, back to our context.
Yes, and as ethereal and as intangible as even what we're talking about is, that is the value of it.
Exactly.
It suddenly, as the point leader, I'll take me as an example, as the point leader, it gives you permission to subtly say, Andy, I think this author is onto something that you've missed. Mm. But you don't have to be the authority, because I may not view you as an authority. You know, Lane, that's a pretty good idea, but you know, when Jim Collins says you know, Patrick Lencioni says it or somebody else says it, it's like, wow, you know, If we're going to discuss this, we need to take it seriously.
Right.
So we have seen so many times other authors and other content surface issues we needed to talk about, but they gave us new language. I think it created a safer place for the conversation. Mm. It certainly didn't start off personal, but when it became personal, again, it had been buffered with, you know, we've invited a stranger into this meeting, and he or she has, you know, delivered this content. Now, what are we going to do with it? We're going to ignore it? Are we going to be threatened by it? Or are we going to flex with it? As we tell leaders all the time, if you don't create a place for those kinds of conversations, they don't happen. And if they don't happen, the organization is poorer for it. Mm. And I will always lead the same. Your ideas will always be the same. And again, it goes back to what this entire conversation, how we started this whole conversation. We may start off with something unique and better, but it will not stay unique and better if there's not a constant conversation around how to make it better. And again, it's the curse of knowledge. We know what we do, but if we don't invite that outside information in or those outside insights in, we're the poorer for it. So I think, again, as much time as it's taken, and some of it was wasted time, it wasn't all valuable. We didn't ask everybody in the organization to read every book we read because they were all great. But every once in a while, you know, we would trip over an insight, an observation that would trickle down to the whole organization. And I think it's because from the very beginning, we committed to being a learning organization.
Andy, as you're saying, when a team learns together, it gets exponentially smarter. I mean, it's the power of collective wisdom.
So, right.
So why don't more leaders orchestrate this in their leadership?
Well, we've talked about some of this. I have friends who just don't like meetings. I mean, there are just meetings, leaders who just – they just hate meetings.
Yeah.
And it's not – you know, it's just a personality thing. So if you hate meetings, you're really going to hate some of these conversations. And as you and I have joked about – you know, we have people on the leadership team from time to time who hate meetings. Mm. But as I say, this is my meeting. You're invited, and I want you to participate. You don't have to like it, but I want to know what's in your head,
right.
And I don't want to lead without your information on the table so I can make better decisions. So some people just don't like meetings. I get that. And in these discussions, there's no way to evaluate progress. You know, you talk for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and it's over, and you think, what have we accomplished? Perhaps nothing. So it, for, you know, for the person who is just, you know, minute by minute, I've got to be able to measure the progress. That's
right.
Frustrating. It's time consuming, like we said, and again, it feels like a waste of time at times. And then, you know, there are people who just don't like to read. When you say, hey, we're going to read a book together, we're going to read an article together, you know, for me, that's easy. But there are people who just aren't readers. So again, and if you have a point leader of a team or an organization who's not a reader, then, you know, they listen to this conversation and go, not going to happen. Can we watch a video? You know, and a lot of leaders do that.
Right.
They bring in our DVDs or they, you know, pull in a TED Talk and say, let's watch this together or watch it on your own and then let's talk about the content. So there's lots of ways to get rich and new content into the discussion. But here's something I would suggest, and I've actually witnessed this. I was at a team meeting of a Fortune 500 company. I was just asked to sit in on the meeting because of something that was going to happen afterwards. And the CEO asked another team member to lead the discussion. And they had a discussion basically like what we're talking about. It was a learning time. And this woman was phenomenal. And apparently he knew she's phenomenal and he knew he wasn't. And, you know, as I've gotten to know him a little bit, she was better in that role. So again, for the team leader who thinks, okay, you know, we really need to do this. We need to set aside some time. I don't want to lead it. I don't want to facilitate it.
Right.
I'm not good at facilitating a discussion. I'm just good at giving my opinion and shutting down the conversation. This may be something you hand off. But again, if you said, hey, you know, based on what you've seen over these past 20 years, this would be a non-negotiable. We would figure out a way to be a learning organization. And so I would say to all of our leaders, you've got to figure this one out.
Landy, we've talked about four things that we thought were important then, but we know are important now. But last month, you said you were saving the most important one for last. Why don't you tell us what that is?
Yeah, as we wrap up, this is something that everybody listening knows. We've talked about it. People have written about it. The people that you surround yourself with, the people that you hire, make all the difference. It really is Jim Collins' statement that you think who before what. Mm. There is no way to overemphasize that point. And I was so fortunate in those early days to have worked with an incredible group of people. I got to pick and choose from that group of people to start this organization. And when I sat down to write our business documents, the documents that would define our organization legally, I wrote out essentially a constitution. The first statement I put in there is the people we choose are more important than the system we use. Mm. Because the right people can take a bad system and get good things done. But if you take a perfect system, a perfect business, a perfect idea, and fill it up with the wrong people, bad things happen. Mm. You've got to have a great product. You've got to have a unique product. You've got to make your product better, all those things. But if you don't have the right people, things don't get better.
Right.
And things don't stay great. So the people you choose, really, it's more important than the system you use because great people do great things and healthy people keep the culture healthy. So I am so blessed, and I give myself zero credit for this because I essentially chose from a small pool of people that I already knew. You know, we didn't know the future. We didn't know how big this thing was going to get. Reggie Joyner used to say, we didn't just start with a blank page. Mm-hmm. He says, we started on the same page.
Right.
And that made such a huge difference. So as you're listening today, as you're processing all of this, again, if you're asking the question, hey, there's so much leadership content, how do I know it's really important? These are the five things that we think are most important of all the things we've done. But at the end of the day, it really is who before what.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And if I could go off note, thanks so much for the past 20 years. And on behalf of our entire team, thanks for how you've led us. And I can honestly say we all genuinely look forward to the next 20 as much as the last. And so to our listeners, we want to thank you as well for joining us. To hear more from Andy on leadership, please visit andystanley.com.